Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 5 for Autumn Semester 2018. Lecture 16, delivered on October 18, 2018. The title of this lecture is Bonds.
Today, bonds.
The dynamic yield curve is showing that the yields on bonds are rising. Now, as yields on Treasury bonds rise, that will push up the yields on all other bonds. Bonds are borrowings. So in other words, as the government's yields on its treasuries, that its borrowings, goes up, that means that competing for that same capital, corporations, private companies, and consumers will also have to pay higher prices to attract capital. As the yields go up on mortgages, on corporate bonds, etc., that will slow down business activity. You won't be able to see as much borrowing. You won't see as many people buying homes on mortgages because mortgage rates are going up. You're going to see companies cutting off lower return on investment ROI projects because the cost of capital is above those projects. Now, where is this all coming from? The Federal Reserve is pushing up interest rates. There's no doubt about that. But the much, much deeper reality is this. The United States is borrowing money at the highest rate in history. It cannot afford all the money that it's spending. Why can't it? It had these massive tax cuts last year. We are living way beyond our means. And so we have to borrow money as a government, as a country, to pay our bills because we refuse to either cut spending or raise taxes. And as a result of that, the government will have to pay higher interest rates. It will pay whatever interest rate it needs to get its money. That will force all interest rates upward. That's just the reality of it. There's no politics involved. The government borrows money hand over fist. Well, that means that it's going to pay higher interest rates to get the money to do that. And as a result of that, companies and people will have to pay more higher interest rates. And all those places that lend us money, the places like China, the places like Japan, Canada, Europe, all those people who lend us money, that money they got because we bought their cheap products. However, as you will see in this lecture, even though those are American dollars in the foreign reserves of those central banks, there are other places that those countries can invest those dollars. So we are not only our government is now not only competing with businesses and consumers for those foreign reserves of American dollars, they're also competing with other countries that will denominate their borrowings in dollars, like Panama. Panama just borrowed $1.2 billion and it's denominated in American dollars. So China, which really isn't thrilled about spending its American dollars here in the United States anymore, oh, you'll take our American dollars and you'll pay us back in American dollars? We'll lend you the money, Panama. And any country I can find that is willing to denominate in American dollars, well, we're just going to say Chinese, they'll take American dollars. So bring those American dollars here. Let the empire die. Let it beg for its money. It doesn't know how to live within its means. Well, we've got very strong places where capital can flow in Central America, South America, West Africa, parts of Asia. We got all kinds of places we can get that money to go instead of to coddle Americans and their need for spending and low taxes. So we're going to go into bonds today. Now, bonds is a generic word that we have to be a little more specific with it. The first thing to, and I've gone through this before with you, and I'll just go through it again here, is that there are technically debt, borrowings, bills are less than a year in duration. Notes, I mean, traditionally, notes were 1 to 7, 1 to 10 years. Although, interestingly enough, I'm hearing this being used in a larger, for longer paper. Netflix issued 15-year paper, borrowed on 15-year. They referred to those, I saw financial experts referring to those as notes, 15-year notes. Okay, well, now 15 years is a note. Anything longer than 15, no, 20, 30, 50, 100 year, 500 year, whatever, those are bonds. Although the term bonds is kind of like generic now, any kind of debt is a bond. You, madam, decide that you're going to borrow on a 30-year loan to buy that dream double-wide trailer on the south side of Decatur. You'll be issuing a bond. And I, the banker, will be the investor buying your bond, lending you that money for that double-wide trailer on the south side of Decatur. The mortgage is actually a secondary part. A mortgage is an attachment to the promise to pay. And it's sometimes there, it's sometimes not. If there is a mortgage, the mortgage is an attachment that says there is a specific asset that is collateralizing the borrowing. So in your case, it would be a mortgage bond. But it is a bond, and the mortgage is a secondary part of it that promises me, your investor, your lender, that I can take your double-wide trailer back if you don't pay me. Gotcha. Now, interestingly enough, if it's not a mortgage bond, then it's called a debenture, D-E-B-E-N-T-U-R-E-S, debenture. A debenture is just an uncollateralized bond. A mortgage is a collateralized bond. Now, I think I mentioned this to you before. There are specialized terms. Like, for example, in the business I was in several different times, if the borrowing is for equipment and it's a long term, it's called an ETC, an Equipment Trust Certificate. But it's just a mortgage bond. It really is just a mortgage bond or a mortgage note. Like if a company needs to borrow money for 15 years for a new fleet of vehicles, that might be on an ETC. When we borrowed the money to buy rigs for our oil and gas exploration, those were on ETCs, Equipment Trust Certificates. They were just mortgage bonds. The mortgage collateral was equipment, so that's why they called them ETCs, Equipment Trust Certificates. And in other types of businesses, mortgage bonds have other names that are just specialized for that industry, but they are just mortgage bonds. Now, in all of these, there's either a direct or an implied interest rate being paid. Frequently, the interest rate is actually a consequence of the price. The price is what is being moved around. That mathematically moves the yield in the opposite direction. Let me explain here, and I'll use a simple one. I've mentioned this before. There's a kind of bill. It's called commercial paper. It's issued by very large creditworthy corporations for the purpose of having money for 30 days. It's highly liquid, this paper is. It's very popular with investors who just want, like 30 days, they want to lend their money and make a little off it. So, for example, commercial paper ...30-day... $1 million... face is going for $9.92. Okay. In other words, in 30 days, the borrower will pay the lender, the investor, $1 million. In exchange, right now, the investor will lend, buy the paper for $992,000. This is called discount paper. There's no interest rate attached to it. There's no interest rate in here. It's hidden in the price. Now, here's where you have to remember that formula that I gave you a while back. End over beginning to the 1 over the number of years minus 1. This is the annualized interest rate. Annualized, well, let me put it this way. Annualized yield to maturity, I should note in parentheses. You see, the price is hidden. The yield is hidden in the beginning price. So in other words, one company might get a price of $9.92. Another company might get a price of $9.94. Another company might get a price of $9.91,500. So the price is actually going to drive the yield on this. Now, here's where the thing gets to be a real pain in the butt, is just doing it mechanically, the calculation. Now, on Tuesday, bring your computers with you so that you can open up your TI-83, or bring a TI-83 if you've got a physical copy of the machine. Because we'll do a lot more of these. Today, I'm just going to show you. You write it down. And then on Tuesday, we'll do it in class. By the way, the homework for this chapter, I'm putting that off until next Wednesday night. Okay, that way I'll be able to show you a little more of this on Tuesday. Just get it. Yeah, no, hardly anyone's done it. A few people have, but I know. You did it? Oh, okay, good, good. I just wanted to make sure. I didn't think you were that ambitious, but yeah, you're all good. It's due on Wednesday. That way on Tuesday I can show you, have you go through this again with your calculators in front of you. Because it's really easy to do this stuff if you've got your calculators. But anyway, with this one, the real pain in the ass with this one is putting it into your stupid calculator, right? So in this case, the number of years right here would be that 1 over, that would be 30 days of 365.25 days. So all your parentheses have to be in place. Yeah.
Are you assuming every day month?
No, I'm assuming 365.25 day year.
I know,
but I could do it. I could have done it as 1 over 12. I could have. But no, I'm going to do it exactly right. I'm glad you pointed that out because, you see, his point was why you could have just done that, say, 30 days of the month, 1 over 30. Or, I'm sorry, 1 over 12, 1/12 of a year. But, no, I'm not going to do it that way. So what I'm going to do here, now, follow with me, and you should put this down in your notes if you can. I'm going to whip out the TI-83 virtual and get it here, clear, now. Open parentheses, $1 million is the ending price, divided by 992,000 is the beginning price. Now I'm going to close those parentheses, and I'm going to raise this. Now watch what I do. Open parentheses once, 1 divided by. Open parentheses again, 360 30 divided by 365.25, close the parentheses once, close them again. See, because this outer parentheses trapped the exponent. This inner parentheses traps the calculation of the denominator. If you do it wrong, there's one good thing about finance formulas, and I've mentioned this before. If you make a mistake, your answer is obviously wrong. It just screams at you, you're wrong. And then I've got to do the minus 1. Don't forget your minus 1 equals 10.27%. Yeah, that makes sense. I know I did it right. Well, I'm not sure, but I got a good idea I did it right. 10.27% is the annualized yield on this paper. 10.27% annualized yield on the paper. Now, again, this is discount paper. Discount paper is, or discount bond, or discount debt, whatever you want to call it, is debt where you are lent a smaller amount of money and you pay back a larger amount of money. The larger amount of money is the face. Unless I say differently, and I won't say differently, the face on corporate and government debt is $1,000. It is always $1,000. So I say, what is FV? Face value, future value, you say $1,000. Be careful. If I don't say dollars, I might be giving you a quote. A quote is a tenth of the price. So, if I said 98.12, that's $981.20. 98.12. Watch out. That is not a dollar number. Do not ever put a dollar on a quote because it isn't a dollar amount. Face value is $1,000 unless I say something otherwise. The difference between, okay, now, if it's not discount paper, then it is just coupon paper. If I say CVS, and I give you some weird numbers down here, 5.45% October 2023 at 98.60, let's say. That means that the bond was issued by CVS. Its CIK number will be this little number here, which I can't think of one of those off the top of my head. Huh? It's the unique identifier of the bond. There's a number with every bond. I'll show you one here in a minute. As a matter of fact, actually, I should pull one up right real quick here. 5.45%. That is a percent of the coupon. That's a percent of the, that's a coupon. It's a percent of face value. So in other words, every year, this bond pays $54.50. Every year, if you lend CVS money, every year until 2023, you'll get $54.50 in the mail. And in 2023, you'll get one last check for $54.50. And you'll get a check for $1,000. Because you lent CVS $1,000. In other words, corporate and government debt does not amortize the face value, the principal. All it does is service the debt. It pays the interest. Now, consumer loans, you're paying those payments. They pay the interest and they pay down the balance. Corporate debt does not do that. Government debt doesn't do that. It just pays your interest every year, and then at the end, it pays you one last interest payment and pays you back what you lent, the $1,000. That's how corporate and government debt works. It services but does not amortize the debt. Now, in this case, this bond's price is $986. So if you wanted to buy one of these bonds right now from someone who had lent the company money or someone had bought it, you'd pay that much. Go. They are an annuity. They are exactly an annuity. They're a nasty because they are everything a level ordinary annuity except that they have that stupid $1,000 on the end, so you can't calculate them like normal annuities would. Fortunately, your calculators can make hamburger of these. They're so easy. Doing these by hand the way we used to back when I was a kid, I mean, it was just terrible. I mean, this was how they punished you. You know, they'd see me, okay, fat boy, you're ugly. Do a bond. But I don't want to do a bond. Shut up, fat boy, or you don't get a cheeseburger. Okay. I mean, literally, doing one bond pricing exercise could take you an hour. And that's if you were a geek. Let me show you. Now, I'm going to back away from this one. And I should point out something. In the real world, the RW, in the real world, two things. One is that bonds pay their coupon two installments a year. So in other words, this CVS bond, you wouldn't get a $54.50 check every year. You'd get a $27.25 check every 6 months. That's the odd thing about them. They would divide it up into two payments a year, semi-annual. We'll do one that's simple to begin with, and then we'll do one that's more complicated. It's really nothing. You just got to remember a couple of things. First things first. DTB 5.85% October 2030. The yield to maturity on this is 6.08%. Find the price. Now, in this case, now, yeah. Go ahead. No, you get 1,000. You get face. Okay. Face is what you get. Good question. Again, at the end of a bond's life, you get the $1,000 times how many of the bonds you bought. And that's exactly whatever it was before that. Interestingly enough, what will happen as bonds get closer to maturity, they will converge on par from either above or below. Because on the maturity date, you get $1,000, so why would the price be any different from $1,000? So at maturity, all bonds, unless the company's in default like Sears is, all bonds either rise from below toward par, 1,000, or they fall from above toward par. But it's always because at the end, always you get $1,000. In the last days of a bond's life, it's pretty much almost right on it. And you'll see that. I'll show you a couple of bonds that I've found that are near their maturity date. And even though, okay, let me go on here. Okay, watch. The 6.08% yield to maturity, that is what the market thinks the bond should pay. Now, this bond here that I've written, this DTB 5.85%, that was what everyone thought the lenders and the investment bankers and the company agreed to at the time this bond was issued, probably in 2010 or in 2000. It was probably a 20 or a 30-year bond. But now, as time has gone on, the interest rate environment has changed, and DTB's risk has changed. So now, based on all those combination of factors, the market says, this bond should pay 6.08%. But the bond is paying 5.85%. Now, question, quick question. Madam, you are an investor. I am DTB. I pay you 5.85%. You think I should pay you 6.08%. Are you happy with me or mad at me? That's right, you're mad at me. I'm not paying you enough. So, are you going to pay me more? Are you going to price that bond more than the face value or less than the face value? Less, because you're punishing me. Bad company, bad company. Okay. Where the hell was it? You see, you're going to spank the company because it's not giving you enough. The yield is above the coupon, so this bond should sell at a discount to par. At a discount to par. Let's see if it does. I've always wanted to, Wait. Ow. Try that again. Watch. Now write down the steps, and then you can do this with this weekend. Okay, you're going to go to... Think you're going to go to the pub, too, this weekend, okay? And so you've got your calculator with you. This is how you get friends at the pub. You show them how to find the yields and prices on bonds. Not just that, man. We're talking about the cheese balls there, which are excellent, the fried mushrooms, and yes... And we're also talking about love. Real love at the pub. And we all know what I'm talking about, right?
Wow, the power of finance.
No, the power of love. Apps, finance, TVM solver. Now, we're going to do this as annual payments, and then I'm going to go back and do it as semi-annual, okay? Your book, the problems in the book start with just annual payments, and then they do the real-world version a couple of sections later. They say, oh, by the way, they actually are semi-annual. So we'll just do it. How many years does this bond have left in its life? How many years? 12. That is the term of the bond. The term is how many years are remaining. The maturity of the bond is 2030. The term of the bond is 12. So you put in at the end, apps, finance, TVM solver, N is 12, okay? Now, the I percent, you write this down, I percent is always the yield to maturity. It is always, whether you know it or you're calculating it, that's YTM. Don't ever put the coupon in there. Do not put the coupon in there, because if you do, I will send over this guy. I know he's got a Doberman pincer, and that Doberman can pincer like you would. Oh, he'll give you such a pinch. In this case, we do know that it's 6.08. And remember, with financial calculators, if it's a finance app, you put in the percent, 6.08. Now, if this were semi-annual, I would make the 12 times 2, and I would make the YTM 6.08 divided by 2. Because everything would be in half years. But here we're just doing regular. It's just the easy one. Now, price value, the PV of the bond, that's what we don't know. That's what we're going to calculate, what its price is. The payment is where you deal with the coupon. The payment is where you deal with the coupon. In this case, it's 0.0545, or 85. 0.0585 times the par value 1,000. It's always percent times par. Now, one thing I should point out here, again, if this were semi-annual, you'd divide this by 2 to get 2 payments a year. Now, the next one, do not forget the face value. This bond has a kicker at the end of 1,000. So FV, you put in 1,000. One other thing, make sure, and I've mentioned this before, this is an ordinary annuity, so the PMT has to be on end. Otherwise, leave everything alone below FV. Now, we're going to go back up, take your cursor back up to PV, price value. Alpha, solve. Alpha, enter. 980.80. Do you see that as we had predicted, this bond is selling at a discount to par? It's a little below par. Why? Because the market thinks that the coupon is not good enough. So they spank the bond. Now, I want you to remember that number. Now, I'm going to go back and do this as a semi-annual, more realistic. The only thing that's really you have to watch out for here is that N is now 12 times 2. There are 12 times 2 payments. And the yield to maturity is 6.08 divided by 2 because it's semi-annual interest. And finally, one last thing is your payments are now 0.0585 times 1,000, but you divide that into 2 payments a year, so you divide by 2. Now you go back up to the price value. Leave everything else alone. Price value, and you go do your alpha solve. Alpha, enter. And you can see it's a very small difference. The price is just a few pennies different between getting annual and semi. But it is different. So for God's sake, watch out when you're doing those problems in the online, because they'll catch, if you miss that penny, couple of pennies difference, it'll catch you. Okay, you got it? Now, here's the real world. We aren't told the yield to maturity. The markets don't work in yields. They work in prices. Buy, sell, price goes down, price goes up, all that kind of stuff. So in other words, when the real thing happens, the prices are what you have, and the yield is implied mathematically by the prices. Let me show you. I'll have to pull this off here. Oh. Go here. New York Times usually has some bond prices. Corporate bond prices today. There we go. Coming down here. Okay, look at this GE. Whoa, wow. Okay. GE, this General Electric, capital of international bond, international fund. This bond is paying a coupon of 4.2%, 4.42%. The maturity date is in December of 2035. Now, in other words, that bond was probably issued in 2015, which would be a 20-year, or was issued in 2005, which would have been a 30-year. At the time, 4.42% the lenders were happy with that. But things change. Right now, this bond is selling at a serious discount to par. Do you see it? That's a $906.91 bond. That's a heavy discount to $1,000. So this bond is being spanked. Now, they're doing the calculation for you here. I'm going to show you how that calculation is done. We're going to do the GE bond. Pulling this up, let me get this over here. And we'll do this as a semi-annual. We're going to calculate the yield to maturity based upon the bond's characteristics and its price. First of all, how many years does this bond have left on it? Talk to me. 17, I think, yeah. So we would say 17 years times 2 payments per year. Okay? Now, we don't know the yield to maturity. You're saying, well, wait a minute, fat boy. It's right there. No, we're going to calculate what they're doing. Okay? We do know the price. Okay? So we're going to ignore the interest rate. Now, what is the price of this bond? Remember, always a PV goes in as a negative. Negative $906.91. Okay? The payments are going to be 4.42% times 1,000. Oops. Thank you. 0.0442 times 1,000 divided by 2. 2 payments a year. They cut it into 2. Price value, that's the price. No. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Multiply by 10. Now let's go up and get the yield to maturity. Now you got to be careful about something. You're going to get, because you put in everything semi-annually, you're going to get a semi-annual interest value, which you have to multiply by 2. So you write that down. Always multiply, if you're calculating YTM, times it by 2. So we're going to do alpha solve. That's 2.627412347. So I'm going to take the cursor over to the end and say times 2. And then drop the cursor down, Yahtzee, 5.25%. See it? That's how they're getting it. Do you see it right there? The yield to maturity is 5.25%, just like we calculated it. Again, see how the bond is selling at a severe discount to par? And therefore, what that means is that the market thinks this bond is paying way too little. The market says this bond should be paying 5.25%, and this bond is paying only 4.42%. Bad bond. Spank, spank, spank. Let's come up here. Notice, interestingly enough, this one. See the CVS bond? The market thinks it should pay 5.39%. Is paying only 2.80%. But see how close to par it is? That's because the bond has almost no life left in it. In a year and a half, the thing's going to pay you $1,000, so there's very little time for that spread between yield and coupon to mean anything. Look down here. Let me find one that's really hardcore. Wow. Here's one. This Petróleos Mexicanos is running 25 basis points spread. Coupon is 6.50%. The yield is 6.25%. So in other words, this bond is paying more than it needs to according to the market. Therefore, this bond is going to be rewarded. It'll sell at a premium to par. Sure enough, right there. See it? I'm going to leave that one alone. That one would be nasty. Let me do this Toyota. Oh, look at this one. This one is selling almost right at par, even though the yield spread is nasty on that. See how the market says this should be paying almost 2.5%, and yet it's paying only 1.70%. But it is so close. I mean, this thing is going to mature in 3 months. You see it? It's going to mature in January of 2019. So that's why, even though there's a serious spread between the coupon and the yield, it's selling close to par, because in 3 months, if you own this bond, you're going to get $1,000. Pretty much the coupon doesn't mean anything anymore on this bond. Let me look at the CVS bond right here. Look at the CVS bond. This thing is due. My number's going to be off on this one, okay? I'm going to tell you right now. Because this one is actually a little bit, it just paid a coupon right here. I better be careful of that one. That one's not a good idea. Oh, here's one. Oh, Abbott Labs. This is a decent one. This is Abbott Labs. Let's do this one. Abbott Labs has a term of 8 years. Do you see that? It's going to pay in November of 2026. So it has a term of 8 years times 2 payments per year. You leave the I% alone because we're going to find the yield to maturity, just like they did. As a matter of fact, I'm going to cover up the yield to maturity on this. Okay, present value, the price value of this Abbott Labs bond is negative $995.54. Always a negative on the price. The payments on this Abbott Labs bond are 0.0375 times 1,000. Divided by 2. Yeah.
For all the things you're showing us here, it doesn't specify
semi-annually. In real life, always semi-annual. In the book, it'll say whether it's annual or semi-annual. I made sure the homework, I wrote a few of the questions, but I let the book do most of them. I made sure it told you whether the coupon was annual or semi-annual. When you do this in real life, though, you're always going to say semi-annual. There are some, like I said, I have heard, and I've never seen one myself, but I've heard that there are some that are paying quarterly, and there are even some that are paying the coupon monthly. Don't know if that's real, that's true or not. Just don't know. But anyway, let's go back up and let's get the I percent. Let's get the yield to maturity. Alpha. Enter. That's 1.9076. Now let's times it by 2, because if we put in everything semi-annually, out will come a semi-annual yield. 3.82. Close. What's going to happen there? There's a tiny difference. In the real world, I'm in October. This matures in November. So there's actually a coupon in there that's still carrying a month of life in it. And that's going to have a slight impact. Not enough to matter. And the ones that you'll do in the book don't have that difference there. But that's why there's a tiny little bit. My rounding brings me to 3.82 from 3.8152 as 3.82. Now, the calculation that's being done by the bond calculator here on the New York Times bond screen is saying it's 3.81, and that's because they're including that little extra calculation you have to do for that 1 month difference. In reality, it's not going to be that much. You take my course in 341 or my investments course 242, I'll show you how to do it. It doesn't make that much difference. And it's easy to do the calculation, but I don't do it in 240. Okay, that's that. There's one more thing I want to point out. Bonds come in all kinds of weird varieties, tricks and things like that. One thing that can happen is a bond A bond agreement. You're my lender. I'm the borrower. I issue the paper. You buy the paper. You lend me the money. You lend me $1,000 for each one of these bonds that I sell you. The agreement is this monster contract called the indenture agreement, the bond indenture agreement. It is just has everything in it. Everything about the borrowing, the payments, saving the money so that you can make the final payment of 1,000 times whatever at the end. That's called a sinking fund. All of that's in there. Now, these bond agreements are generally pretty standardized. That makes them easier to sell into these secondary mortgage markets because all the bonds are similar. However, bonds can come in some odd flavors. Like there's one trick called callable bonds. A callable bond, generally, the call is for me, the borrower. Suppose that I have to pay you 8% per year through 2048. Let's say interest rates fall. It's 2030. Interest rates are 5% on bonds like mine, but I'm paying you 8%. If my bond is callable, I can pay you back all of your money and reborrow at 5%. You are going to hate that because you are expecting to get 8% until 2048, boom, I give you your money back, everything is 5%. So you now have to pay, and now you can lend it only 5%. That's a callable bond. Go.
So there's no option to be like, I don't want my money back. Yeah.
Not if it's callable. Go. Yeah, see, if it's, okay, now the call period is generally, it will say like any time between 2028 and 2040. There will be a call window that will open up. Yeah.
Refi,
that's all it is. It's refi, corporate refi. And so now, what's funny, there's a better one. But let me point out, if they ask you for a yield to call, all you do is say, instead of the term being 2048, all you do is say, okay, the bond's going to call at 2000, whatever the first chance it gets. So you just reduce the term. Like if it was a 30-year, you just reduce the 30 down to the first year that bond can call and calculate the yield to maturity there. That's called yield to call. Instead of, let's say that the bond can call in 2030. So instead of going 2048, which would be 30 years, you would do 2030, which would be 12 years. So N equals 12 times 2 instead of 30 times 2. That's how you get a yield to call. Now, another flavor. This one, this one is just pure evil. And there are variations on it. Don't get me wrong, and the book tells you some variations. Works like this. Okay, sir. You have lent me money, $10 million. Now remember, you have the prior claim on cash flows. I must pay you your interest payments before I can do anything else. You can shut me down if I don't pay you. You have the prior claim on my assets, on my cash flow. Well, times are bad. My company is in real trouble. I don't have the money to pay you, but I really don't want you to shut me down and do all that mean stuff. If the bond is convertible, I can turn your bond into stock. Let's say my stock is selling at $2 a share. I owe you $10 million. Okay, I'll just give you 5 million shares of my stock. You see, now I've turned you into an owner. What can you do to me as an owner? Nothing. You're part of me now. Instead of being my giant daddy who's going to spank my ass, I've eaten you. Now you are part of me. Try spanking me from the inside. Oh, you just spanked my spleen. Ha, ha, ha. No, you can't do anything to me. That was weird. Okay, You see the point, though? Convertibility turns you into an owner. And when would I exercise a convertibility provision? It's when I'm in so much trouble, my stock sucks. And so I make you part of the suckitude that is my company. Suckitude? Yeah. Oh, no, it favors the company. It is adverse because he was a bondholder. He was a lender. I owed him money. He could take me to court, liquidate my company, sell my dog, shoot my dog, sell my Bible on Craigslist, make my parents wear furry costumes. Remember the whole thing? He can't do that now. He's an owner. He'd be making his own parents wear costumes. It favors the borrower. Yes. It's like I owe the bank money for my car. Okay. All I do in a case like that is instead of owing them money, I just make them owners, part owners of the car with me. Which is kind of, you know, something like that. You see, convertibility is a nasty little provision. Yeah. Well, yeah, but they're liquidating a company that's is dead. Yeah. Yeah, you've essentially wiped, the company is dead in the water. And you have no higher priority. Let's say that I have turned all of the borrowers into owners of the company. Okay? The first thing is that I can't destroy the company. You can't, as an owner, you can't kill your company. Yeah, you can't. Think about it this way. You, madam, are my adversary. Beast. Call me something. Call me an animal.
Dog.
Dog. Aardvark. Presbyterian. No, say Seventh-day Adventist. Say Seventh-day Adventist. Seventh-day Adventist. Rastafarian. Baptist. Trollop.
Harlot.
Slut.
Tramp.
B-movie actor. Okay, well, we're calling each other names. Okay, we can do that. We're different people. Now, we're the same person. I'm looking at myself in the mirror. Beast, creature from the Black Lagoon, Jason, Freddy, Pumpkinhead, It. You can't do that to yourself. You see, you're hurting yourself. Okay? You ever tried to spank yourself? It doesn't work. Moving along here. Okay. Now, there are different kinds of bonds. Here's some odd things. Now, you have to pay off the face value at some point in the future. That could be a lot of money all at once you have to give back to the lenders. So every bond indenture agreement is going to have some kind of a provision so that you have to put money into a sinking fund so that by the time the bond is due, there's plenty of money in there to pay them back. Okay, that's called a sinking fund. Now, there are a couple of variations on that. For example, there's one where if let's say I want to borrow $10 million. What you could do is you could agree to lend me $2 million a year each year for the next 5 years. So that out here, I paid you only $2 million a year every year for 5 years going back out. That's like a sinking fund on the back end. We call those serial bonds, okay? There are other kinds of bonds too that, I mean, there, and I'll go through some of those on Tuesday night, but one that's very important to bring up to you are foreign bonds. Foreign bonds are denominated in a currency other than the currency of the corporation's nation of domicile. So in other words, I told you about those Panamanian bonds. They pay in dollars. The coupons in the face are paid in dollars, American dollars. So those are technically foreign bonds because Panama has its own currency. It's called the Balboa. But one thing that you can tell, if you've ever been down there in that part of the world, I mean, most of those countries, they actually, there's no exchange. I mean, they just take dollars just like they take their own currency. So it's like I'd go in and I'd buy food and I'd have American dollars. They were quite okay with those. So those foreign bonds were very normal in some parts of the world. But like I said, the interesting part about that is that there are all these countries like China that have massive foreign reserves of American dollars. Typically, in order to spend those, they'd have to spend them in the United States. In other words, lend our government American dollars, lend our corporations American dollars, buy American company stock with American dollars. But when you've got a country like Panama that's more than happy to take American dollars and denominate its bonds in American dollars, that makes those bonds very attractive. There's a stable economy, growing economy, an economy that needs to be manipulated, strategic position globally, and we just sit there on our fat asses, well, we're into ourselves these days, while China, Russia, Saudi Arabia, Canada, Mexico, those countries that have excess reserves of American dollars, they just start lending them to countries that borrow in America and pay back in American dollars. So essentially, the Roman Empire falls apart because its currency is quite happy to be used anywhere in the world, even though its citizens don't give jack crap about the rest of the world. So that's one trick that's going on, foreign currencies. Now, there's a variation on this where there are asset bonds, where a bond pays off in something other than money. Tell you a story about this. World War II, Europe was essentially ground zero for demolition. Any of you see the movie Museum Men by any chance? Monument Man, I'm sorry. Yeah, Monument Man. Yeah, it's an excellent movie. Excellent movie. But it gave you an idea. I mean, we laid Europe to rubble. The Russians did. The Nazis did. The Italians did. The Spanish did. We all just tore up, bombed the hell out of everything down to the place where a typical residence might be 2 inches high. So after the war, we had to make a choice. We can just sit there and smirk. Yep, we tore the hell out of that. And by doing that, we would allow the Soviets to take care of everyone and turn Europe into a communist glory land. Or we could get our asses over there and rebuild the whole thing ourselves. We said, okay, we'll do that. The Marshall Plan. We borrowed insane amounts of money for the purpose of rebuilding Europe. Literally building the things that we had bombed back to hell. From Germany to France to Italy to Spain, we put it all back together again. The Americans did. We borrowed the money in order to give investors, lenders around the world, and especially in our country, the confidence in this borrowing that we were going to do. The bond indenture agreement said we will pay these bonds off in gold. We will pay these bonds in gold. They were gold bonds. I got a very strange story about those gold bonds, personal story. Obviously, in a situation like that, that would be awesome. You know, the bonds were bought, just wiped out, bought. In other words, investors from around the world lent our government money so that our government could rebuild Europe. And our government paid those bonds back in gold. There was only one problem with this whole scheme. Do you know who the investors were, who the lenders were, who the buyers of those bonds were? They were the European old filthy rich families that bought those bonds, that lent the money. So when the bonds came due, we started having to shovel gold out of Fort Knox and give it to European rich ancient families. We nearly wiped out our gold reserves and filled up the coffers of private families in Europe. The Europeans that we were helping to rebuild their whole continent, we were giving them the gold from our treasures because they were the ones who would lend us the money to rebuild their countries. Literally, we nearly creamed our gold reserves doing this. So there's a lesson for you. Be nice, but not too nice. That's all I have for you tonight. I thank you.